Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Anantam Highways Trust Q4 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jignesh Shah, Whole-time Director and Chief Executive Officer of Anantam Highways Trust. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Shah.
Thank you, Renju. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the Anantam Highways Trust earnings call for Q4 and full year 2026. On behalf of the management team and the board, I extend a warm welcome to all of our unit holders, analysts, lenders, and participants joining us today. When we addressed the investors during our first public earnings call in February, we had spoken about building Anantam not merely as another listed InvIT, but as a long-duration institutional infrastructure platform founded on predictability, governance, disciplined growth, and sustainable cash flow generation. Today, just a few months later, I believe we have taken meaningful steps in translating that vision into execution. FY 2026 has been a defining year for Anantam Highways Trust. It was a year in which we completed our listing journey, operationalized the platform, integrated the acquired assets, established our governance and reporting framework, and demonstrated the stability of our business model through our first full quarter of operations post-listing. We began this journey with a portfolio of seven high-quality hybrid annuity model assets with long residual concession life and government-backed annuity cash flows. These assets continue to perform in line with our expectations and reinforce our belief that high-quality road infrastructure, when combined with disciplined capital allocation and prudent leverage, can create a highly resilient and scalable investment platform. For Q4 FY 2026, the trust reported consolidated revenue of approximately INR 224.5 crores and EBITDA of approximately INR 202.6 crores. NDCF at the SPV level stood at approximately 220 crores, reflecting the stability and predictability of the underlying annuity cash flows. NDCF at the trust level for Q4 FY 2026 stood at approximately 54.38 crores, and accordingly, the board has approved a distribution of rupees 2.50 per unit for the quarter, comprising 0.4141 per unit as interest, rupees 2.08 per unit as dividend, and 0.003 per unit as other income. The net asset value as of March 31, 2026, based on an independent valuation report, stood at 115.80 per unit on a fair value basis. This reflects the quality of the underlying portfolio and the strength of the long-duration annuity cash flows. From a balance sheet perspective, the trust continues to maintain a highly conservative financial profile. Importantly, this performance has been achieved while maintaining this conservative balance sheet. Our debt-to-EV ratio remains comfortable at approximately 42%, and we continue to maintain the highest AAA stable credit ratings. The structure of our debt book, combined with annuity receipts, which are linked to MCLR or bank rate mechanisms, provides a natural hedge against interest rate volatility and enhances the resilience of the cash flows. Also, the debt maturity profile remains long-tenured and staggered with no concentration risk. Underlying cash flows continue to provide comfortable debt servicing coverage while also providing us flexibility for future acquisitions. Moving on to growth, so over the last few months, one of the key questions investors have asked us repeatedly is how we think about long-term growth and whether the platform has sufficient visibility beyond the current portfolio. I believe the announcements made this week provide a very strong answer to that question. The board has approved the proposed acquisition of 7 additional ROFO assets. These assets represent the next phase of Anantham's growth journey and are aligned with our strategy of pursuing disciplined accretive acquisitions that strengthen both DPU sustainability and long-term NAV growth. We believe that what is important is not just the size of the opportunity, but the quality and the strategic alignment of the pipeline. The ROFO framework with Alpha Alternatives and Dilip Buildcon gives us a differentiated growth engine with strong visibility, transaction execution capability, operation continuity, and access to a large pool of operating infrastructure assets. As we had highlighted earlier, our ambition is to build one of India's leading infrastructure InvIT platforms over the coming years. However, we will just not be pursuing scale for the purpose of pursuing scale. Growth will be pursued with discipline. Every acquisition opportunity will continue to be evaluated through the lens of cash flow quality, leverage prudence, distribution sustainability, and long-term value creation for unitholders. We also remain deeply focused on governance and institutionalization. Since listing, our effort has been to build an InvIT platform that inspires long-term investor confidence through transparency, disciplined disclosures, conservative financial management, and alignment of interests. At Anantham, we view distributions not as a short-term target, but as an outcome of the underlying asset quality, prudent capital management, and sustainable operating cash flows. Our objective is to create a platform capable of delivering longevity and consistency of returns across cycles. India's infrastructure sector continues to stand at the center of the country's long-term economic growth story. Within that ecosystem, we believe operational infrastructure assets with predictable cash flows are increasingly becoming an asset class pursued by both domestic and global pools of capital. We believe Anantham is strongly positioned to participate meaningfully in that opportunity. We remain fully committed to building Anantham Highways Trust with a long-term mindset, balancing stability with growth, distributions with reinvestment discipline, and scale with institutional governance. I will now conclude and we can open the floor for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Dhwanil Raut with Dalal & Broacha Stock Broking Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I had two questions in mind. The first question would be regarding your distribution framework. And how is it going to be going forward in the like coming quarters compared to your peers? And my second question would be, your current ROFO pipeline is entirely HAM-based. So are you looking to add any toll assets because that those assets are inflation-protected? And what would be your source of funds to acquire those ROFO assets that you already have?
Sure. Thank you for participating on the call. So, coming to the first question on the distribution framework, on the first investor call held last quarter, also I had explained the philosophy. I'll basically reiterate what I had said on the last investor call, that we are looking at a total return framework for investors, which combines consistency in distribution with growth over a point period of time, combined with accretive acquisitions which lead to NAV growth. So the distribution philosophy will be guided by the acquisition pipeline that we have at Anantham Highways. And currently the pipeline is looking pretty strong. So we believe that reinvestment of the cash flows in pursuing these acquisitions are enabling us to deliver total unit holder returns. So that's going to be the distribution philosophy for Anantham Highways. Regarding your second question on the ROFO pipeline, currently we are basically having only HAM projects at the InvIT level. Moving forward, we are looking to pursue acquisition opportunities across the road sector, whether it's HAM, annuity or toll. Yes, we will have a balanced approach to building the portfolio in the InvIT. Any acquisition that we pursue will need to be accretive to the unit holders. That is the first guiding principle. If we find the right toll asset which basically meets the risk return threshold for the unit holders, we will obviously pursue that. Having said that, over a period of time, the composition of HAM versus toll will be within a defined framework that the board has defined. So basically, to answer your question, we are not averse to pursuing toll assets.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Sarvesh Gupta with Maximal Capital PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, thank you for the opportunity. So, sir, the first question is regarding this proposed acquisition. Now, nothing has been detailed about the pricing at which you will do or the share swap pricing. So can you give some color on that?
Sure. So, we have circulated. We'll be circulating the independent value. There has been an independent valuation exercise that has been undertaken for these assets. And the valuation report will be circulated to all the unit holders along with the postal ballot. Along with that, we have also uploaded the valuation report on the Anantham Highways website. The independent valuation report will act as a cap on the valuation at which these assets will be acquired. As we have repeatedly highlighted, any acquisition that gets pursued will need to be accretive to the unit holders. At the current valuation that Anantham is putting in the market, that will set the floor pricing for the assets that come into the InvIT. The valuation at which the assets will be brought into the InvIT will be somewhere between the valuation arrived at on the current floor pricing basis at which the InvIT is trading in the market, and the cap being the valuation kind of put out by the independent valuation agency.
Yeah, so sir, on this, basically last time on the call you had said that any acquisition will be DPU accretive as well as NAV accretive. Now NAV is 116 rupees and you are trading at 108. So now to be for the acquisition to be NAV accretive, you either have to have a discount on the enterprise value of the acquisition, or you have to issue units at premium to the NAV. So how will you handle the NAV accretion post this acquisition? Will it be handled by a combination of these two, or you will do premium to NAV and buy at the fair value, or how are you proposing to do that?
So as I mentioned earlier, the acquisition will be at a discount to the valuation put out by the external valuation agency. So that is the approach which will be followed. The pricing of the preferential allotment gets guided by the SEBI guidelines. On the pricing of the InvIT units, that's the approach which will be followed. But the acquisition will be at a discount to the NAV.
But will it be NAV accretive?
It will be NAV accretive.
Okay. And secondly, sir, this 2.5?
So, I mean, essentially, I mean, you know, the it's basically buying anything at a discount to the NAV, and the, you know, the size of the InvIT is doubling. So, based on that, it will be NAV accretive.
Yeah, I mean, if the price is, suppose, between 108 and 116, then it has to be at a discount so that the NAV increases from 116 post that. And that is what my understanding from your...
Yeah, we understand that. Yes, that's how it's going to be.
Okay, so that is number one. Now, secondly, on this 2.5 rupees DPU, so... A, this is entirely, you know, taxable. So, you know, how are you, I mean, planning to change the structure in a tax-friendly manner, or is it possible given the kind of numbers that you have on your P&L and balance sheet?
So, see, over a period of time, the composition of the distribution will change. You will see return of capital play a role, you know, over a period of time. And so basically over a period of time, the distribution composition will be a combination of taxable and tax-free.
No, but let's say for the coming year, should we assume that this is what it is? So it is like 100% taxable?
I mean, you know, it will evolve quarter on quarter. All I can say is that we'll be adopting a balanced approach in terms of taxable and tax-free distribution. I would rather not commit to a guidance on what will be the proportion of taxable and tax-free at this stage.
Okay. And so this... Now, you know, you also mentioned that you mentioned that something you want to do as a reinvestment of cash flow. So there are some InvITs and REITs in the market which are basically distributing almost the entire 100% NDCF without bothering about reinvesting some of it. So are you suggesting that you will be, in, you know, sort of giving out 90% and the remaining 10% would be there for reinvestment?
So what we are saying is that basically we will continue to adopt a balanced distribution approach. If there are opportunities basically to acquire assets which are leading to appreciation for the unit holders, then, you know, obviously a higher proportion of the underlying cash flows will be used for pursuing those acquisition opportunities. And in quarters, basically, where those opportunities don't exist, then the distribution philosophy will be different than the quarters in which we are pursuing the opportunities.
Okay. And so the other thing is that on the DPU itself, now with this 10 rupees sort of the run rate that we have, I think perhaps we are the only newly listed InvIT which is falling below the 10% yield itself. So how do you think about this particular thing? I mean, I know that you haven't given a DPU guidance, but, you know, if one were to sort of assume that this is what it is going forward, then, you know, we will be the only one which will be in single digit yield percentage. So how do you look as far as DPU is concerned?
So see, I would basically, you know, every InvIT is different. You know, we have a different philosophy in the way in which we are running this InvIT. There's a differentiated business model. We believe that we have a superior business proposition, but I don't want to get into comparisons across different InvITs. I think what we will basically, you know, urge you to do and urge all the unit holders to do is to look at a total return emanating out of this InvIT over a period of time. We want to kind of create scalable growth. We want to create accretion for the unit holders, and that can be achieved through a combination of regular distribution and pursuing accretive acquisitions. And I think the sum total of that is what basically essentially would matter to the unit holders. Even from a taxation efficiency perspective, achieving the growth or the income or the returns, you know, more importantly, through the capital gains route, is significantly more tax efficient for investors than getting taxable distributions. So we want to ensure that, you know, rather than having volatility in distributions, which we have seen in the market, that there is consistency and longevity of distributions combined with there being continuous accretion of assets, which are creating value for the InvIT. That's our philosophy.
Sir, that is well understood. Now on the cost of borrowing side, so last quarter presentation also, I think it was similar to 7.5% and most of it was T-bill linked. Now we have seen, you know, yields inching up, and this time also you have mentioned the same as 7.5%. So shouldn't it go up and incrementally, sir, what is your cost of borrowing?
So right now we only have this borrowing at the InvIT level. The last quarter it was 7.5%. You are correct that as T-bills have moved up, for the next quarter there will be a slight increase. Generally speaking, I mean, as you rightly mentioned, interest rates in the market are inching up, but you would know that with rising interest rates, it's good for HAM projects. So in fact, that will lead to improvement in the underlying cash flows for us. Having said that, essentially two things. We basically are looking or are in conversations with the existing lender to reduce the spread on the current debt to kind of, you know, achieve parity with the debt cost of other InvITs. And in terms of the new borrowings that we will need to undertake for the ROFO assets that are coming in, we basically are in conversations with lenders. We believe that the pricing on the additional debt that we will avail at the InvIT level will be lower than where we are at today. That's basically that's how we are driving our liability side of the balance sheet.
Okay. Now, sir, this 4,700 crore that you need to spend for this acquisition. So I'm assuming that around 40% would be through equity and remaining is debt, right?
No, it's around almost 46-47% through equity and the balance through debt.
So, and this 47% will come entirely through share swap with DB Group?
It is both Alpha Alternatives Group and Dilip Buildcon Group are undertaking a swap transaction.
So, sir, this, you know, one challenge here is that, you know, our units are extremely illiquid as of now. And, you know, if we would have gone with some external investors also, at least partially, it would have created some benchmark for your valuation as well as created some liquidity in the market. So how do you look into that, sir?
So we take that feedback. Now, the first round of assets that we are basically taking to the InvIT, there's a share swap or a unit swap. Over a period of time, over the next 12 to 18 months, I mentioned this on the last call as well, there will be incremental assets that will be added to the InvIT. We have a strong ROFO pipeline, strong visibility of growth. And as we scale up, the idea is very clear that we need to broad base the investor base. We are mindful of the fact that currently liquidity in the InvIT is not where we want it to be. So we will be basically raising capital through both primary as well as an offer for sale route, and with the idea being that we broad base the investor base, with one of the objectives being that it leads to deepening of the Anantam counter and creates additional liquidity in the units.
Understood, sir. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Bhavish Doshi with Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. And my question is that what is the current leverage in the platform and what was the leverage at the IPO and right before the first distribution?
So the current leverage is around 42%. At the time of the IPO, we were at around 44% level.
And what are the source of funds used for the leveraging before the first distribution?
So we've used part of the cash flows that were generated from the operations to reduce the debt at the platform. I mean, the way to look at it is that we created space for the accretive acquisitions that we are now pursuing in the InvIT.
So it was only cash flow used or something other your cash has also been
It was only cash flow that was used.
So then what about the cash on the balance sheet was lying there, sir?
So the cash in the balance sheet basically, you know, continuing cash from the SPVs that were brought into the InvIT plus sir, the capital that was raised as a part of the IPO, combination of that along with the cash flow from operations is what has been used to bring down the leverage.
But then that is a basically you have used that the cash which was lying on the balance sheet at the time. So depend the loan basically.
Sorry, I couldn't understand the question.
So the cash which was lying at the time of IPO on the balance sheet has been used for to repay the debt also?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes, yes, we have done that.
Okay. So then what was the logic for that? It is basically a silly thing that you know you are using that balance sheet to cash basically and you know to pay the debt and then again you are raising a debt for now for taking the what acquisition, sir?
No, I wouldn't look at that like that. I mean, as I explained, you know, we utilize the cash to reduce the leverage.
Please pursue the cash which was lying on the balance sheet. And then it is a valuation, okay. And then that repayment you could have had done but before the IPO also. You could have used that cash before the IPO also, sir.
No, this cash was basically the cash which was there was as a part of the SPVs which were brought in. So the timeline in which that cash came basically was post finalization of the offer document. So that couldn't have been done. There were certain disclosures and all of that. So that cash combined with the cash flow from operations is what we have used to pay down the leverage in you know, and along with the IPO capital, you know, and this essentially has been done so that we can pursue growth.
And one last question, one more thing, you know, how are you going to diversify your cap table, you know, basically, your capital table? Just now that one person has asked for me also. The same question because I don't find any institution guys are there within in your platform at this point of time. Okay. So how are you going to, you know, diversify your capital table? So
that's incorrect that there are no institutional guys.
I'm saying that very few one I'm doing, okay, compared to others, okay.
I mean, I think the first question is that, I mean, why are we comparing, you know, I mean, ourselves to others? I mean, the point is that, you show me one InvIT, sir, which basically within 6 months has doubled in size. We're bringing in quality assets. We have a strong ROFO pipeline. We have a differentiated business model, as we've explained, you know, where the InvIT is being run by a professional asset management platform. And the back end, the technical support is being provided by the best-in-class O&M company. Quality assets built by quality developers are being brought to the InvIT. I mean, over a period of time, as we basically broad-base, you know, and, you know, raise more capital, investors will come in. You know, we are patient. We are patient long-term investors. We believe we are creating a long-term story. And, you know, basically the cap table over a period of time will reflect the hard work we are putting in and creating this platform.
And last question, if I can, may I ask you, is about this.
I think one more point basically which we need to also highlight, sir, is that, I mean, our IPO which was done was only 400 crores. You know, some of the large investors basically have a minimum ticket size that they need to write. Now, as we basically raise additional capital, and we will basically be raising basically a lot of capital because of the growth plans that we have, that will then offer the opportunity to some of these large domestic pools of capital and even global investors to get the opportunity to write bigger checks. So, I mean, I am, you know, I have no doubts that as we scale up, the cap table will start basically seeing all the usual suspects on the cap table.
Yeah, but most of the ROFO asset what you're going to add is going to be the swap model, you know. So it is
necessary, sir. I mean, you know, I mean, today we have done a swap. That is not basically a compulsion. Over a period of time, you will see us adopting a mixed approach to this. Some assets will be brought in for swap. Some assets will be basically sold for cash consideration. And as the InvIT scales up, like all the other InvITs have done, we will also get the ability to then increase leverage post-fix distributions. So once that happens, you've scaled up the InvIT to a particular size and scale. Your ability to kind of, you know, manage the capital structure changes. And then at that point in time, essentially, it will be a combination of swap, some cash, as we kind of move along this journey.
And the last question which I was on to ask is about the HAM platform, basically, you know, got okay. So what are your outlook on the HAM platform in this environment, basically? Okay, as you said, say the interest rate hike is, or if interest rate scenario is basically good for a HAM platform, but I think in the toll makes a better revenue stream in the time of inflation or interest rate goes up, WPI inflation goes up, sir?
So it's basically, I mean, there is no, I mean, you cannot say with complete certainty that the toll assets make a better proposition than HAM assets. In HAM assets, there is complete certainty as far as how the cash flows behave. Now, in toll assets, the fundamental assumption one is making is that with increasing interest rates, basically, consumers will keep on consuming. At the end of the day, bulk of the toll traffic comes from freight. Now, if interest rates go up, there will be consequential economic slowdown, which then translates to freight slowdown. So one can technically argue that while toll rates are partly inflationary protected, if your total traffic goes down, you could look at a scenario where your total revenue could take a hit. So, I mean, I wouldn't say with absolute certainty that toll projects are better than HAM. Yes, there are toll stretches which are good. And as I've also mentioned, there is no averseness to doing toll assets as a part of the InvIT. But because in the interest rate movement is inbuilt into HAM projects, there is better visibility in how assets behave with movement in interest rates as far as HAM projects are concerned.
Okay, thank you. And sir, how much internal accrual do you make per quarter, sir?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
How much internal accrual do you make per quarter?
Around approximately, you know, the SPVs generate, you know, currently 200 crores. Hmm. At the SPV level, you know, obviously from there you need to make your debt repayments and your interest servicing at the InvIT level.
And you are planning to add some internal accrual for adding the assets also?
Yes, that's basically what I mentioned, right? I mean, in the last two quarters, we've used part of the internal accruals for bringing down the leverage so that we can bring in the next set of assets. And, you know, we do have a pretty strong visibility on our growth pipeline for the next 2 years. So, I mean, we will be adopting a balanced approach who's scaling up this platform.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot for your question. Answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Nilesh Doshi with Prospero Tree AMC. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, earlier participant might have asked the similar question. I repeat the question. See, we are acquiring the ROFO asset by issuing the fresh capital, fresh units. So it will increase, it is a dilution. And when we are acquiring the HAM asset, which are generating the fixed return, and we are issuing the fresh unit, does it mean there is no accretion to the DPU? And because DPU is the prime factor for the InvIT units price. So how do you look at the, because what is the logic of issuing the fresh capital? It is the only because we are at 42%. It is another logic, sir.
So I would basically, you know, I mean, one way to look at this is that if the sponsors and the other large investor are looking to increase their stake in the InvIT, I mean, it's a vote of confidence on the underlying platform. In regards to your question, whether it is DPU accretive or not, basically, it's just pure math that currently the InvIT essentially is quoting at a certain IRR. It was issued at an X level. It is quoting at a level higher than there. I mentioned earlier that we have undertaken an independent valuation report for the ROFO assets which are coming in. These assets are being proposed to be brought into the InvIT at a discount to the external valuer's valuation. Also indicated that this will be NAV accretive. So if you are bringing in these assets at an entry IRR higher than the IRR at which the InvIT is trading today, like any company, I mean, you know, if you basically make an acquisition where your P/E multiple, for example, is lower, you're buying a company which is basically, you know, at a much cheaper rate than what you are trading in the market, it will be basically EPS accretive. On similar lines, this is basically the same principle that I am basically buying this asset, you know, at a discount to its NAV and at a higher IRR than what the InvIT is trading at. So yes, it is going to be DPU accretive. And as regards the consideration payment, I mean, there were two possibilities. We could have gone and raised capital, okay, at this stage. But mind you, today, the InvIT basically, I mean, on a relative basis, is a small InvIT. You know, we basically are at an enterprise value below 5,000 crores, market cap of around 2,300, 2,400 crores. Now, if we are acquiring assets, which is basically doubling the size of the InvIT, the amount of dilution which one would have had to take at this stage would be phenomenal. Yes, it would have led to the broad basing of the investor base in the InvIT, but we believed that we basically are still young in the journey. We basically expressed the vote of confidence by taking the swap of the units. And as I mentioned also earlier, that over the next 12 to 18 months, as we go down further in this journey, we will be basically taking steps to broad basing the investor base by doing a mix of primary capital raise as well as an offer for sale. And that also will then lead to further addition of ROFO assets into the InvIT.
I understand, sir. But our current average cost of borrowing is 7.5%. Does it mean they are offering to discount to that rate also, which will generate? Because you said that you are buying the asset which is below their NAV. And so therefore, it is a DPU accretive. But our cost of borrowing is 7.5%. Do the Anantam cannot raise the fund through the debt by at the same rate?
So, sir, as you are aware, there are restrictions on the amount of leverage InvITs can take. So till the first six distributions, you can only go up to a maximum leverage of 49%. Beyond that, after 6 distributions, one can technically go up to 70%, though InvITs prefer to stay between 55 to 60%. Currently, our capital structure, basically we are at approximately 42% leverage ratio. So, your question that are we bringing in these assets at below the debt cost, the answer is no. What you need to look at is the benchmark at which the unit capital is trading in the market, because that is the like for like comparison. The benchmark at which the unit capital is trading in the market, the assets are being brought into the InvIT at a higher benchmark than that and at a discount to the NAV. That's the way to look at whether it is DPU accretive or not.
Okay. And sir, my last question, sir, we have maintained the same DPU per unit, that is the 2 rupees 50 paisa. Does it mean that we have generated the same NDCF in the quarter 3 and quarter 4, the same amount was generated, or there was a less amount but some amount is distributed out of the capital?
No, sir, as I mentioned, basically, so every quarter, depending on when the annuity is falling, right, I mean, every project gets 2 annuities during the year. Currently, we have 7 projects. So, 4 projects receive annuities in Q1 and Q3. The balance 3 receive in Q2, Q4. So, yes, there is a relatively lower cash flow generation in Q4. Having said that, as I explained, part of the cash flow has been utilized for reducing the leverage, and basically, we are being guided by the distribution philosophy that we have mentioned, you know, on the last investor call as well, and as I mentioned earlier as well, that we want to have consistency in distribution with growth over a period of time, while leaving sufficient flexibility in the capital structure for us to pursue accretive acquisitions. So, we basically are urging investors to look at us from a total return perspective, you know, some distribution and balance basically the NAV accretion, which then leads to a total return generation over a period of time for the investors.
Okay. And then can I assume that the 10 rupees will be the guidance, because we are maintaining the same DPU per quarter? So for the FY27, it may be the, without acquiring the fresh assets, it will be a rupees 10 per unit?
Sir, I basically, you know, as I mentioned earlier as well, I mean, we basically don't want to give any guidance on the DPU. We basically will get guided by, you know, as I have been repeatedly highlighting, and maybe I'm sounding like a broken record, but we'll be guided by the philosophy of pursuing a combination of some distribution and accretive acquisition. So I wouldn't want to give any guidance on the distribution.
Okay, okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you. All the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Dhwanil Rao with Dalal & Broacha Stockbroking Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the follow-up. I just had a doubt regarding the dividend. Is it a taxable dividend or non-taxable? Because yesterday I tried calling someone from the company and I got confirmation saying it's non-taxable, and on another website it was showing non-taxable. And previously on the call you mentioned that it's fully taxable. So just some highlight on that.
No, so the dividend is fully taxable.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Rahul with Alt Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Given that there are a lot of questions around on the DPU as well as, I mean, you mentioning that focusing on total return, I was looking at the NDCF waterfall which you had shared in the presentation. So given that we have generated, let's say, close to 184 crores of cash flow, and we have utilized some cash as well, is it correct to assume that since you wanted to acquire more assets, the 7 ROFO assets, you have repaid more debt and kept the DPU low so as to give a higher total return in the future? Is that what I mean, is that a correct inference basis your responses?
I mean, yes, partly. Yes, we have used part of the cash to create space for the acquisitions that we are pursuing now and in the coming quarters and years. I wouldn't say that the DPU is low. I would just say that, you know, it's basically consistency and in line with, you know, our vision towards basically creating, you know, wealth for the investors over a period of time.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Sarvesh Gupta with Maximal Capital PMS. Please go ahead.
Sir, thank you for the follow-up. Sorry to harp on the DPU point, but I understand you don't want to give a guidance. Can it be at least assumed that, you know, this 10 rupees run rate will continue, at least it will not fall, and then with every round of acquisition, once it is done, then it will have a jump from there. Can that at least be assumed?
Sarvesh, basically, you know, what I can say is that, you know, certainly will not be able to give a guidance, but, you know, the expectation would be that it will at least not fall as we scale up. I also mentioned earlier that, you know, I mean, as we scale up, basically, and quarter-on-quarter, the thought process would evolve, would change. Today we are in a growth journey, and we basically have already mentioned what our vision is by FY 2029. We believe that there are, you know, enough acquisition opportunities between the ROFO pipeline and otherwise, which is allowing us to bring in quality assets at value accretive prices into the InvIT. I think, from investors' point of view, that is ultimately what matters. Having said that, I mean, obviously, you know, going forward as we scale up, the distribution philosophy basically will reflect the fact that in the quarters where we believe that, you know, there are possibilities to increase the distributions, the thought process will evolve as we go along this journey.
Understood. On the point of value accretive acquisition, now there can be two thought process around it. One is, of course, you know, from the sponsor pipeline, you know, I think the value for them also gets better created if they participate via, let's say, an InvIT platform compared to what it is with a listed firm, right? Always you can get assets from there and transfer to the InvITs at maybe even lower than fair value and create value in this platform. That is fine. Generally, you know, given that we have seen so many InvITs coming into picture, both private and public, and all of them want to acquire these sort of HAM assets. There, is it even possible now, given the environment of so many buyers, that one can pursue value accretive acquisition in that space by acquiring third-party assets?
I wouldn't want to comment on the other InvITs. Basically, what I can tell about Anantham is that we have clear visibility of our pipeline for the next few years.
Okay. No, in general, are you seeing some interesting third-party opportunities for acquisition, is what my question is.
In fact, in the seven assets that we are bringing in, not all of them are Dilip-Buildcon assets. There are assets which basically have been acquired from other developers other than Buildcon. So, I mean, Alpha Alternatives basically is not a developer. So, and we basically have also brought in assets from the non-Dilip Buildcon side. And as we scale up, you will basically start seeing a balanced mix of assets at the InBid level. I mean, obviously, we value, you know, Dilip Buildcon assets, and they will continue to win new road assets, and they will bring their assets into the InBid. But there will be other developers' assets which will also come into this InBid, as we have demonstrated in this round.
Okay. And after this round, how much more is left in the, let's say, with Dilip Buildcon and Alpha Alternative in terms of, let's say, invested equity plus SPV level debt? What is that value which is left with them which can be acquired?
So you mean to say right now? So right now, basically, the are you saying the number of assets which are there with the identified assets which are there with Dilip Buildcon? Which to, so totally there were 18 identified assets which were there, out of which we got 7 at the time of the InBid listing. We basically in this round are bringing 4 Dilip Buildcon assets and 3 non-Dilip Buildcon assets. Dilip Buildcon has 7 additional identified assets which are a part of the ROFO arrangement, and any other asset that they have won post the 18th asset, which will also be offered to the InBid under the ROFO arrangement. Alpha Alternatives, basically, when we had done the IPO, there were only 4 identified assets, but through the Build India Infrastructure Fund that Alpha Alternatives manages, I mean, obviously, since then, you know, there are additional assets which have been added as a part of the fund portfolio, which over a period of time will also be offered to the InBid. I mean, that's why I mentioned that we have clear visibility in terms of the growth pipeline for the InBid in the coming years. Having said that, I mean, and it's very important to note that whether it is Dilip Buildcon assets or non-Dilip Buildcon assets that come into the InBid, basically the O&M will be undertaken by Dilip Buildcon on a fixed price basis as far as the InBid is concerned, and that brings in basically the best in class O&M construct to these assets and a consistency basically in the approach across the various assets that come into the InBid, and you know, that's how we create value for the investors. And I mean, as you would know, I mean, there's a fixed price contract, so I mean, you know, basically it's market price, fixed price contracts. So, but then there is complete clarity on the cost that we are going to incur over the 15-year journey of these assets. So that kind of helps in reducing volatility of cash flows at the InBid level. So that's how basically, you know, we are creating a differentiated platform as we scale up this InBid.
And this fixed price is valid even for major maintenance work that will be undertaken?
Sorry?
Even for a major maintenance and major repair of the roads, if at all, which has to be done in few years, so that also price is fixed?
That also price is fixed. I mean, that's very important. I mean, as you would know, I mean, with whatever dislocation has happened with the current war, I mean, you know, it's a matter which basically needs to be highlighted, that even in this tough times, I mean, it's fixed price contract. So, you know, both the partners basically are seeing this as basically as something to kind of operate over the business cycle. So, they are basically still doing it on a fixed price basis, even the major maintenance as and when it comes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and 1 to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Rahul with Alt Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the follow-up opportunity. I just want to clarify on the ROFO. So acquisition dates are mentioned, the two tranches in June and December of this year. So is it correct to assume from our side that the new assets will start to accrue additional DPU in Q2 and Q4 of this financial year?
Yes, it will start accruing from Q2. You are correct that the transaction basically is in two stages for two assets out of the seven. So for one asset, 49% is being brought into the InvIT at this stage. The balance, 51%, will come in Q3. And in one more asset, basically it's 75%, which is coming in this round, and then the balance, 25%, will come in December. All the other assets, it's 100%. But yes, it is going to be adding to the earnings of the InvIT from Q2.
And since we are doubling the AUM more or less, just wanted to understand what sort of DPU DPU growth which you can expect in percentage terms. I'm not asking fixed in general post the acquisition, especially since bulk of the acquisition will anyways happen in end of Q1, right? So just want to get some sort of broad sense.
So, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, I basically am not in a position to give guidance on the DPU or the growth that would take place in the DPU in the coming quarters. All we can basically, as I mentioned earlier, that the DPU will not go down. The DPU philosophy basically is that, till such time that we are seeing, you know, clear visibility on growth, which leads to accretion for the investors, we believe that, a combination approach where some distribution happens combined with growth is a better proposition, and that's what we want to execute on. That's what we are executing on. But, you know, at this stage, we are not in a position to give any guidance on where the DPU ends up as we scale up.
So just one feedback from our side, from my side. Essentially, I think you would have realized a lot of queries around DPU and guidance. What it ends up happening, what it's a virtuous cycle from our side. If you give some sort of DPU guidance or framework, even if not guidance, a clear framework, that really helps us in terms of getting more confidence, and that really will show up even in the your unit price growth as well. So, I mean, just a feedback from my side. I mean, that's it. Thank you.
No, thank you for the feedback, Rahul. You know, duly noted.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further questions, we have reached the end of question and answer session. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jignesh Shah for closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Renju. Thank you everyone for joining us today and for all the thoughtful questions and continued engagement with Anantham Highways Trust. As we conclude today's call, I would like to reiterate a few important points. We are still at the very beginning of our journey as a listed InvIT, but we believe that we're building a very strong foundation. We've already brought in a high-quality operational portfolio. We are adding to this portfolio in this quarter. These are stable government-backed annuity cash flows. We are employing a measured leverage strategy, pursuing the best-in-class governance standards, and executing on our ROFO pipeline. Our approach will continue to remain disciplined and long-term in nature. We are not pursuing growth for its own sake. Every capital allocation decision will be made through the lens of sustainability and will need to ensure value accretion to the investors. We will be very, very prudent in our leverage approach. We basically believe that DPU needs to be, you know, sustainable, consistent with growth over a period of time and not volatile. And we are pursuing a long-term value creation for our unit holders. We believe that the strength of our ROFO pipeline, the operating expertise of Dilip Buildcon, and the institutional investment and governance capabilities of Alpha Alternatives together is creating a differentiated platform which we believe is well positioned for long-term scale and credibility in the infrastructure investment ecosystem. We also recognize that trust is earned through consistency, whether it's consistency of execution, consistency of disclosures, consistency of governance, and also consistency of distributions. That is how we will continue to execute and build this platform. On behalf of the board and the entire management team, I would like to sincerely thank all of you for taking the time to engage with us and for giving us the continued support and confidence. We are also looking forward to interacting with all of you in the coming quarters and years as we continue to scale up this InvIT and keep on engaging and updating you on the progress of Anantam Highways Trust. Thank you very much, and all of you have a good day ahead.
Thank you. On behalf of Anantam Highways Trust, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.